Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Hello, and welcome to Ruby Rogues. I'm John Epperson, and we are only panelists today because everybody's sick or out or whatever. But today with us, we have Peter Plavica. Is that good pronunciation?
Yeah, almost. Acceptable. It was good. Hi.
Would you tell us how to say it correctly?
Yeah, I'm Peter Havička. It's a Havička. Czech name.
Well, I mean, I unfortunately forgot to actually ask you how to pronounce it before we started, but thank you for the correction. Peter, so how do people know you? Like, what makes you famous? Yeah, tell us about your background a bit.
Yeah, I started in 2007 as a freelance web developer. Then I moved to PHP and WordPress to Ruby and Rails, which I have enjoyed since 2016. I had the chance to work in a few startups, and since 2020, I'm contractor for UK-based startup Avoka software engineer. I'm not so sure if I'm famous, but you know.
It's all good, it's all good. I mean, I appreciate the honesty. So some of the things that you told us when you were prepping for this is that you have a lot of background in legacy projects.
Yeah.
Could you talk a little bit about that maybe?
Yeah. As I said, I have a lot of experience with legacy code base with the bad test suite. Even though I'm not focused on it, but most Rails projects I worked on were basically inherited from the previous development team. So mm-hmm. I saw a lot of extremes there.
I can definitely sympathize a bit with you there. Just about every project that I've worked on, save a handful that either I started or a couple of startups that I got involved in, have been legacy as well. And it has been a sort of norm that they don't come with good test suites. So in my experience as well. Yeah.
Hey folks, this is Charles Max Wood from Top End Devs. And lately I've been working on actually building out Top End Devs. If you're interested, you can go to topendevs.com/podcast, and you can actually hear a little bit more about my story, about why I'm doing what I'm doing with Top End Devs, why I changed it from devchat.tv to Top End Devs. But what I really want to get into is that I have decided that I'm going to build the platform that I always wished I had with devchat.tv, and I renamed it to Top End Devs because I want to give you the resources that are going to help you to build the career that you want, right? So whether you want to be an influencer in tech, whether you want to go and just max out your salary and then go live a lifestyle with your family, your friends, or just traveling the world or whatever, I want to give you the resources that are going to help you do that. We're going to have career and leadership resources in there, and we're going to be giving you content on a regular basis to help you level up and max out your career. So go check it out at topendevs.com. If you sign up before my birthday, that's December 14th. If you sign up before my birthday, you can get 50% off the lifetime of your subscription. Once again, that's topendevs.com.
All right. So, well, before we dive into maybe the article you wrote, I'm just kind of curious. Like, so you get one of these legacy code bases, which happens to people from time to time. What are the like first things that you do to get into it, maybe?
Look for the biggest class there, because I'm expecting that's a Death Star class, and I just try to look at it and find what's the main purpose of this class. Not always is the user class, but mainly from my experience is the user class. And then, of course, controllers, it's the same. I saw a controller that has 2,000 lines and model with 1,000 lines. That's a lot for me. I don't know if you have different experience.
I actually still take care of a code base that has a couple of thousand plus line controllers. There used to be more, but there's still a couple remaining or whatever. I don't know what your perspective is on this, but my perspective in the past has been to, I don't really refactor stuff unless I have like a motivation, right? So we're like making a feature change or something like this, you know, and then I'll do a refactor as part of it, you know, something like that. So I don't typically go out of my way to refactor stuff.
Yeah, I have a similar experience because, of course, new features need to be added. So during working on them, where I have a chance to do some small refactoring, I do it because it can help me. But I know that doing just like big refactor for some reason, it's not always the best option. So this continuous refactoring worked for me well.
Sounds like a similar-ish vein, maybe slight differences, but yeah. All right. Well, some of the stuff that that it looks like you've done in the past, you've written a few articles, and one of the ones that we picked up was this one titled Business Logic in Rails with Operators, which we found interesting for various reasons. But I mean, a lot of it has to do with what we were just talking about, which is, okay, I have a 2,000 line controller, so what of it? Like, why is it like bad or good? Or, and you had some interesting opinions on it. So I mean, maybe let's just start out from a high level. Like, why should I care about my 1,000 line controller?
Yeah, that's a good question. From my experience, these kind of controllers with a lot of business logic can make a lot of frustration for developers to work on them. It's very easy to do a small change that will cause a completely different side effect somewhere else. That's mainly not for controllers, but for models, active record models. So yeah, having business logic separated from these parts make it much easier to testable, and it's much easier to see what's going on in the application. So that's the main reason for me is always to separate things and have a better view of what's going on in the application. So
can you talk maybe from like a high level about what your like techniques that you're using to, for example, separate this business logic out from this controller?
Yeah. For the article that I wrote, I came up with a simple solution for moving the business logic from controllers mainly. But from high-level perspective, it's always good to start with check the test suite for it, if there is any. If not, make tests, because that's the only thing that can help me to be at least be sure to I will not break as much as I don't want to, if that makes any sense.
Yep.
So yeah, starting with tests, and then during the writing the test, look what's going on in the application, in the controller, and try to separate the main business logic to separate class, for example, and control the test seat is always green. So it's like client TDD with red-green refactoring.
So when you're separating stuff out from this controller, like, I mean, you obviously used a technique here in your article. You call them operator classes. They look kind of a bit to me like service objects.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Okay, cool.
Yeah, it's basically...
Is that a technique you use a lot?
I use it in one smaller application. I wrote it about it. And yeah, it worked well. It was greenfield application, so it was much easier to do this kind of stuff. And of course, thanks to the article and thanks to the feedback I received, I found out a different solution. But from the feedback, I can say that most solutions are just service object, but in different level of options or possibilities that can be done with them. So for example, one of the recommendations was Interactor Gem. If you know it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm familiar with it.
Yeah. And of course, I use Trailblazer. And
okay.
for the Avocado application, we, at the end, for refactoring these similar controllers, we used Interactive Gem for some reasons that it was easier for us to have something more complex than just use the simple solution that I wrote about.
Makes some sense. So it sounds like you've done service objects maybe a couple times in a couple different ways. Yeah. So if I recall correctly, and maybe I do need to look this up, doesn't the Trailblazer gem have like, I think it comes with like a form object thing in it or something?
Yeah.
It's one of its modules.
If I remember it correctly, yes. When I had the chance to try Trailblazer in some of the older projects, we encountered lots of small issues with autoloading. And of course, with the Trailblazer that was back then with the version, we also needed to use, like as you said, form objects and the validation differently. So for I believe that for some new project, Trailblazer can be really, really awesome option. But for adding it to already existing project can be more difficult. So that, for example, was the reason why we did not choose it for refactoring in Avoca.
Oh, okay. I was under the impression you were already using it, but it sounds like you were just considering it.
Yeah. And I have experience from the older version. I believe that it's on a different level as far as I know from the feedback to the article.
Got it. Yeah, it's been a while since I've actually tried to put Trailblazer into a project too. But yeah, awesome. So, Peter, are you familiar with like the feedback and kind of discussion that's been going around the community? I think for maybe the past couple of years, there's been a little bit of pushback against service objects in general. There have been a number of articles written in a couple of different directions.
Yeah, as far as I know, I read some article about using modules for it. So instead of calling them service object, it's more about using the same folder in app/modules. It's something that I would like to try someday, but never had the chance to do it. But as far as I know, it's just a different name for service objects because it's always easier to have just like one class for one purpose. And if there is more purposes in that class, it can be really difficult to maintain. So that's from my experience.
It definitely makes, I definitely agree that there's like a whole bunch of things out there, right, that have various names that are all called service objects. That is definitely, there's definitely a lot of alternate names for it.
When I wrote the article, I knew what I want from it, and I want to make everything easier for me and for my colleagues. So, for example, I wanted to be easily understandable even for juniors. So when I started working with Rails, it was hard for me to decide where I should put the code. I want to have it easy as possible for juniors to not do the decision where they should put it, just use something that is already there and it was made for it.
That makes sense. I think when we're trying to like reduce decisions and things, right? I think until you learn sort of like, So I'm thinking about like back when I was a junior, right? And I'm learning, okay, well, I need to put things in these spots in the controller, right? And I need to put this stuff in the model or whatever. And then as you learn all that stuff, then you encounter people who are like, well, actually, don't put a bunch of stuff in the controller. Don't put a bunch of stuff in the model. And you're just like, so where do I put it, right? Like, I think that's where you get at, right? I think because eventually as your app gets larger and larger and you have thousands of lines of business logic, well, it's got to go somewhere.
Yeah, for me, it's always better to create a place for that code because you can always take the code and refactor it to a different structure or use a different solution. And it will be much easier because you already have the code on one place, instead of finding them on different places in controllers, in models, and trying to put them together to understand it and use it.
Hmm. So I think what I'm hearing from you is you're finding that splitting it up between controllers and models is ending up in a situation where you can't find or don't know where your code is.
It's more like where the code is, but what's used, what's need to be used as a, for the purpose of the, for example, for creating users or creating invoices and so on. It can be split on different many places, and having just one place that you can always reach and put the code there, make it easier even for the future if you will want to change the solution you are using for service objects or for business logic and so on. So even though, for example, my solution can probably be used only on small project, but it still is valuable because you can later refactor it to something else that will more fits project, the size and the needs of the team.
I think I understand what you're saying. I think what you're saying is, so there are sort of operations, so to speak, right? Creating a user, maybe initializing that user with certain stuff, like while you're creating it. Or maybe I have, like in your example, you have an invoice, right? So the process, right, of creating or, you know, doing something to that invoice, taking it through some steps, like those are concepts that are business logic, right, that have rules around them often. And those are things that don't have like a great place to live. Yeah. And yeah, okay, so this is exactly the argument that, for example, like I'm in a huge agreement with. I think that the things that we call service objects are things to wrap these concepts, these processes, so to speak. And those are good fits for service objects. I mean, you can probably stuff other things inside service objects, but I think those are the things, yeah, that are,
yeah,
totally that are good fits, in my opinion. Awesome. So in the end, after you got some feedback and things, you tried out the Interactor Gym. I presume it sounded like you were talking positively about it. You liked you liked that result.
Yeah, I liked it. You can reuse interactors, like the actions, because of the support of Organizer, if I'm not mistaken the name. So we find out that we have a lot of small steps, small actions that are shared between a different business logic action. So that help us to make it as easier as possible, each step, test it, and of course reuse it when we need to.
Nice. Yeah, I do. There's like some error handling and stuff. I think the Interactor Gym gives you.
Yeah, the rollback method. It's of course very useful. And the fact that you can easily pass context between these actions was also one of the reasons we chose it to use instead of another options that we had back then.
Got it. I definitely have a little bit more, I don't know if you would call it a purist stance, but I definitely try to make it. Yeah. So I feel like processes, right, to me have always sounded like functional style things, mm-hmm. right? And so for me, a service object is an OOP wrapper, right, around a process, right? So I am describing it when I write my class, I'm writing an OOP object. But inside that OOP object, like when I run it, I want it to do everything in a functional style. So I have a tendency to not do a lot of like context passing and things like that. But I definitely have been on a couple projects that have used Interactor Gem or whatever. And there's, I mean, it's nice to have somebody else write the error handling code for you, for sure. I've rolled my own kind of service object based class type of thing, right, a couple times, and there's a lot of stuff that goes into that. So
yeah, and of course it's was well tested with someone else. It's like basically for every gem with a good history. And yes, I understand your way of doing it, but in our case we had a lot of duplicated actions that are used between many actions. I know that it sounds weird, but for example, with creating an invoice, there are some steps that are similar when you, for example, want to refund the invoice. So this part of code would be duplicated, but using the way of how Interactor Gem work, we could easily reuse these steps. So we have only once there in the code base. It's well tested. So we know that it can be easily reused for even other places. And then the fact that
I think that makes some sense.
Yeah. And of course you can call it just one action. So when needed, you don't need to run the organizer to run all the actions that you have for one use case.
So I'm here with JD from Raygun. JD, when I talk to you, I mean, I really feel the developer vibe, and I know that's your background, but is all of Raygun that way? I mean, you know, it just kind of feels like when I talk to other companies, they're a little more corporate, a little more, you know, focused on maybe, you know, raising money or doing other things, you know, but it seems like when I talk to you, you're just, you know, down to earth developer dude.
I like to think of myself as a down to earth developer dude. Raygun is a little bit different. You know, we're not heavily VC backed. You know, my business partner and I, when we started, we were both nerds. You know, I might be the CEO today and I don't write code on the product. But, you know, the joke internally is, you know, what's the definition of technical debt, Chuck?
Introducing Wondersuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the Wondersuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise, and with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
It's CEO code.
Well,
stuff to go fix.
Stories.
We're a cash flow positive business. You know, we're not heavily VC funded, you know, but we are at a size now where we are expanding, and more folks are discovering what we're about. But yeah, we often look through things through that lens of a developer. You know, I wanted a 30,000 foot view, but I also want to go right down to an individual data point. Similarly, you know, I don't believe in averages. I want medians. I want P99s. I make better decisions that way. And so we try and drive that sort of thinking into our products and try and be as developer minded as we possibly can be.
Yeah, I love that because, you know, for me, it's run by people who get me, and you're not under pressure from like a VC to raise your prices or, you know, go hyper grow. And then, oh, crap, now we're behind the eight ball with our money and now we've got to figure it out. You know, you're just going to keep growing, steadily moving. And I just love that.
Yeah, I mean, the term these days is often referred to as product-led growth, right? Like, get people use the product and say, hey, that's great. I want to give you money. I don't think it's that complicated.
Sounds good. Well, folks, if you want to go check it out, you can go find them at raygun.com. You can actually sign up for a free trial right there on the website.
Yeah, it sounds, I mean, one of the things that I noticed in your article was that it kind of sounded like you organized around, you kind of created like this, like, common interface. It was like, okay, we're going to have like creating a thing, updating a thing. Those are going to be common things that we're going to have every time. And it kind of seemed like you created that sort of like boilerplate-y type interface for yourself.
Yeah.
That was like sort of standardized.
Yeah. That's as I said, I wanted to make it as easily as possible. So the naming convention is one part of it. And yeah, I understand that it can be like too simple, of course. So, yeah.
No, it makes sense. So at the end of your experiment, how did you feel about your test suite? Did you feel like it got more complex to test? Did you feel like it got easier to test?
For me, like basically testing service object is always easier for me because I don't need to deal with database as much as I would need to if I would have the business logic in, for example, models. But yeah, I found it much easier even in tests for me.
Awesome. Do you find yourself doing like a lot of mocking and stubbing and doubling? Do you find yourself...
Because of basically it's a boilerplate, as you said, so the tests can be easily boilerplated too with shared examples in RSpec, for example. So it make even testing easier if there is some rules that can help to... Like that, they can help with everything from the naming, from tests, and from deciding where it should the code B.
Okay, awesome. So did you take this and it, I mean, was this your most recent project? Did you take it and take it to other projects? Did it work well in other contexts or not, maybe?
Yeah, as I said, this is based on one usage of it where I tried to find a different approach to service object, basically. So no, I used it only one project. I think that I learned a lot from it, and mainly from the feedback and from trying it in a different way. And yeah, as you said, it is, you know, it was an experiment. And I stated in the article that I'm writing this attempt for discussion, for feedback, and I'm so glad that I receive it.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm glad the experiment went well. I just kind of had wondered if maybe you had used it in multiple places and stuff, but it sounds like you're kind of working through it and maybe you'll use, I mean, would you use it on another project? Maybe that's a better question to then ask.
I think that for a smaller one, even like if I will know from the beginning that the project will be small, for example, so for some supporting application, yes, I would use mm-hmm. it because it was easy, and I believe it will be for the future too, for the maintenance. But of course, for bigger projects, I believe there are better solutions, as we already mentioned a few of them, that can give you more flexibility, and that's something that can be very helpful for larger projects.
Okay. I don't know that I personally make a large distinction between whether I would use things for big or small projects in that way, but like, I guess maybe I'm curious, what are you, when you're saying big project, like, what are you kind of thinking? How do you decide that something's like big? Maybe I'm just not thinking like big enough or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good question. As I already stated, I have, my experience is based on project that I inherited from different developers. So I, of course, see that the project is already big or not. But when I'm creating a new one, and if I know a lot about the scope of the project, then, of course, I can decide if I will use a simpler way or the more like advanced way, if that makes sense to you.
Roughly how many models? I don't know of a good test to decide whether something's a big project or not. I typically just like open up the models folder and see how many files there are, right? Like that's sort of my like rule of thumb. And like 100 models or more is like a big project to me. What are you thinking? Is that fine?
Yeah, for example, I use that on an application that is used for helping users to billing to people, like that it collects data. So there is, for example, I believe that maybe 10 or 15 models. So that's for me a very small application. And
okay.
I understand, of course, 100 and more is even for me a big project.
That makes a lot of sense. So let's say that you jump on one of these projects that has a less than ideal test suite and you got from somebody else and maybe does or doesn't have service objects, who knows? Maybe has a 1,000 line controller or something. What do you do about that test suite? Do you do anything with it? Do you just add new tests when you add stuff? Do you say, okay, we're going to spend 2 weeks writing as many tests as we can, get some coverage? Or what do you do? What's your strategy there?
I would say it depends, of course. But yeah, it's mainly creating tests for new code or like for bug fixing. And when there is a time to, spend it on writing tests for already existing functionality, then of course it's good to spend this time on it because it's a way how to learn the code base, even though it's maybe the hardest way how to do it, but it can help to understand it and make decisions later if something needs to be refactored or no. And if the test suite is there to help, then that's a big help.
Okay, awesome. What do you do like when you're not working on these legacy code bases, right? These huge legacy code bases, like, do you work on any like side projects? Do you work on any like gems or
yeah.
Are you doing anything like that?
Yeah, I believe that like every developer, I'm using side projects to learn new things. And when I had the chance to work on it and find out something useful, I'm always trying to write an article about it to share it, because I found out that writing about it helps me to get deeper, because I want to be sure that what I'm writing is like right, or at least it's not misleading anything. So that helps me to go deeper and learn even more when I'm writing the article. So yeah, this article was done in a similar way, but it was like I did not use my side project, but I used something that I did in work. But the rest of articles are based on it, and I really can recommend it to share, write articles and share everything that everyone has learned.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. I think one of the things that I have noticed, for example, about doing Ruby Rogues for a while, right, is I actually have to like read up on stuff that I would otherwise like not read about. And like, there's definitely learning involved, right, when you're doing things that are tangential to your job, right? So like,
yeah,
it's not just the code. Yeah, it's doing it's the coding does one level, but
yeah, so it's sometimes more difficult to learn new things on bigger project, because there are more opportunities more opportunities to break something. So for me, it was always easier to like start on a new project where I can, for example, try a new version of Rails, because for some reasons, older code bases are harder to upgrade. So yeah, using side projects for learning is one of the best way to learn something new for me. And yeah, as you said, it helps me to read more about the topic I want to use. For example, I write article about using multi-factor authentication with security keys, and for example, even with Touch ID and Face ID. Yeah, and that I needed to learn about how these things works, what APIs are used on the browser side and so on. So
yeah, a multi-factor is a fun one. I definitely find that, so with legacy code bases, I think the skill that I'm leveling up most of the time is not my coding skill so much, but my like judgment skill, like sort of like my ability to like look at something and be like, should we do this or should we not, right? Because there's so many consequences that can, or risks that you're trying to deal with. Whereas when you're working with like a greenfield project, yeah, I mean, I'm just literally leveling up in my understanding about new Rails, a new gem that I picked to like try out, you know, or all these different things, a new pattern that I may be trying. There's a lot more experimentation room that you get in a new project. Definitely true. Sweet. Well, is there anything in your article or on the subject that we've been chatting about that maybe you explicitly wanted to talk about that I haven't touched on yet? It's okay if there's not. You can let me know that.
Yeah. I'm thinking about it. I mentioned reasons. We discuss usual options that are available for this kind of thing. I don't have any more part of it, because yeah, it's not so big article. But I would be interested on your experience with service objects and moving business logic to somewhere else.
In general, I would say that I have definitely been on teams that have abused service objects, right? Where literally anything and everything got stuffed into a service object, and it became sort of a junk drawer. I've also been on teams that were so loath to use service objects that we did have, you know, very long controllers even alongside. So I've definitely seen a gamut of things. When my personal take on it, and the thing that like I'm always trying to push and talk other people into, is I think that service objects are great encapsulators for processes. I think that you probably want to have a special kind of service object if you want to do like form object kind of things. I think form objects actually fit service objects really well, but I think there's a lot of helpers and things that you probably want for your form objects. Like you probably want to have, you know, some sort of mechanism to handle validations nicely. And when you're doing form objects, you usually have, in my experience, you usually have like nested things and like multiple models that you're saving at the same time. So you probably want to come up with some sort of convention for your app for like, do we merge all the error messages together, right? And pretend that this is one big object, or do we have like, do we present, you know, the error messages as separate things? And that can depend on your use case and things like that. So like, there's a lot of choices that you have to make around form objects. So I think you should deal with those separately from a lot of the other kinds. But I do feel like in general, if you can think of a process, right? So if you are, you know, in your application, you actually have an invoice as a model. And I've been places where invoicing was the name of the process, right? And so you would have like a receipt maybe, like be your model or something, right? And you would have like, you would probably have like an order or something like that. Whereas the particular case that I'm thinking of, you have like an order and you have like these receipt type things. And the process is called invoicing. And that's when you move the order to a state of finalization and send off, you know, an actual invoice, which is not stored in your database because you're just storing the order and the receipt or whatever. But they're getting a printed out version, which I guess is an invoice, right? But you'll never. And so in that particular case, we didn't store that as a model, but the process was called invoicing. So, you know, you could have a process like that. You could have a process of creating a user. Maybe that includes, I think this is the common example for service objects, which is creating a user and sending them an email or something. And I don't know that that's necessarily complicated enough to rise to the level of justifying service objects in your app. But I think it's a fine example, right? Which is a wrapper around a process of creating and maybe some extra stuff that goes on. I think all of those things fit really well. But if you can define a process, then I think that you can stuff it into a service object pretty well. But yeah, I'm a big believer that like, yeah, you should make that as functional as possible. Yeah, I try to write only functional style code in there. That's just kind of how I do it or whatever. There's properties on the process itself. Like, for example, if a process is completed or not, right? So the state that a process in, right? So any state that you have is obviously more OOP related. And that's fine because you have a class that now wraps it, right? So you can store state on it, right? Like without too much of an issue. But inside each of those methods, right? Like, if you write functional style code, I find that you can be pretty happy. And functional style code is easy to unit test. So
yeah, that's true.
That's how I think about it. I missed what you said. Sorry.
Yeah, just thanks for your opinion. I agree, of course.
Awesome. No problem. Cool. Well, thanks for the momentary soapbox. Anything else you wanted to yap about today, maybe, before we happen to fix?
Yeah, I don't think I have anything more interesting. Just maybe say that that's something that I liked when I came from PHP and WordPress, that Ruby and of course Rails allows to have many ways how to do things, that even though there is one that is popular, that you can always do it differently, and that doesn't mean that it's wrong. And that's something that I really like in Ruby and Rails, of course. And that's maybe related with that Rails is omakase.
I agree. I do like the fact that Ruby and by extension Rails as well allows you to, it allows you to shoot yourself in the foot if you want. I mean, it basically allows you to do whatever you want, right? I definitely love that flexibility. I highly value flexibility, I think, when writing code in general. I think that stuff that's flexible gives me the most freedom to change it later, which has been my experience. Like whenever you're dealing with these legacy projects, like what you're working on is something where somebody's going to change their mind on something for some reason. And that's like, there's nothing wrong with that. That's just, but that's the nature of the work that you do on these legacy projects. And so being able to have flexible solutions, I think is super valuable. Sweet. Well, I'll go ahead and move us on into picks then, if we're good. Before we do, though, if people want to reach out to you, talk to you, follow you, or anything, how do they find you, Peter?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter. It's Citroniak there. And I have also a blog, and I believe that will be easier to put it in the description.
Yep, we'll have that in your show notes. Cool.
Hi, this is Charles Max Wood from Top End Devs. And lately, I've been coaching some people on starting some podcasts and in some cases, just taking their career to the next level. You know, whether you're beginner going to intermediate, intermediate going to advanced, whether you're trying to get noticed in the community or go freelance, I've been helping these folks figure out how to get in front of people, how to build relationships and how to build their careers and max out and just go to the next level. So if you're interested in talking to me and having me help you go to the next level, go to topendevs.com/coaching. I will give you a 1 hour free session where we can figure out what you're trying to do, where you're trying to go, and figure out what the next steps are. And then from there, we can figure out how to get you to the place you want to go. So once again, that's topendevs.com/coaching.
All right. So I'll go ahead and open up with picks. So I've got a couple for this week. The first one that I've got recently, so my 5-year-old son has been working on trying to sleep through the night without wetting the bed. That's been a journey. And so what we did is we were like, hey, if you can hit 10 nights in a row, we'll go get this drone for you. And you can like learn. Anyway, he was so excited and we just got it.
Motivation.
Yep. We doing a lot of carrots for this particular thing. This is not something that we feel needs a stick. This is a carrot thing. So anyway, so we got this drone. It's for beginners and it actually has turned out really awesome. He's been getting better. We've been flying it for like 15, 20 minutes every night. We've got like 3 or 4 batteries for it. And, you know, each battery lasts, I don't know, maybe 10-ish minutes of flight time, seems about right. So, I mean, it's not a ton, but for a 5-year-old, it's pretty good. And he's been learning to fly. So it's been really great for him. I mean, it's fun for me too, but it's definitely been amazing for him. He just absolutely loves it. So there's that. And then I've also been working on upgrading my audio stuff. And I have like this problem where I have a mic stand that's like 3-4 feet away from me. And it's got a like, it's, you know, it's got a boom arm and everything. It's holding a 5-pound mic on it. And so this thing has always had balance problems. And I was like trying to like figure out what to do. And a friend of mine was like, oh yeah, you can get like these counterweights. And I was like, oh, that's genius. So, anyway, I like ordered these counterweights and things so that I can basically like not have my mic stand like leaning on stuff all the time. So super awesome. Yeah. I have a longer boom arm coming in now that I have this weight. So I'm very excited that I'll be able to have a much better setup than I did previously. So yeah, I mean, those are my two picks for this week.
Yeah. I was just going to ask, as you mentioned your son, I'm really looking forward when my son will in the same age, because that will be more fun every day. But right now my son is only 1 year old and he is able to run around every day almost like whole day. So yeah, because we wanted to have as much as memories on him, I bought, and I'm just not sure how it's called, gimbal, if you know what I mean. It's something that can hold your phone during your recording.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, gimbal, right? Is it the name? Yeah. So yeah.
Okay.
That helps us a lot to keep phone focused on him when he's running around. And yeah, one thing that I'm really looking forward when he will be older is I'm a big fan of tabletop RPGs like Dungeons and Dragons and Pathfinder. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to play these kind of games and even board games with my kids.
Sometime between about 4 and 5, my son went from not really being able to pay attention / not being interested in board games to being very engaged and very interested and actually pretty competent, just like happened. And we did a board game and suddenly he was like doing it and So somewhere in there it happened. So
yeah,
seems like about five roughly seems to be when they can start picking it up. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe a little earlier, maybe a little later.
We will see.
Everyone's
we'll
gets
see.
Different.
Yeah, but I hope you have fun and that matters the most.
Good deal. Any other picks? So a gimbal.
Yeah.
For young kids.
Yeah, it's not for them. It's for me to be able to easily record them. And that one that I choose is able to like keep focusing on the subject. So you can run around and then just hold the gimbal and it automatically moves around. Of course, some in limited ways, but it's still helpful. And yeah.
Sweet. Awesome. Well, thanks for being on today, Peter. Thanks for chatting with us. Thanks for just writing this article and being a part of the community. I mean, shoot. Thanks for all of it.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for coming on. All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening, and we'll see you again next time. John out.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit cachefly.com to learn more.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.